not actually very far from this
podium. Okay, assalamu alaikum. I'd just like to welcome everyone here tonight. I think it's okay if we get started now, so it's 7:15. We've got all our speakers here, so we'll get the show on the road. Okay, 10th of December marks the Day of International Human Rights. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights was drafted to avoid the reception of the horrors of the Second World War. It promised respect for human rights and human dignity. Tonight we will explore whether this promise has been fulfilled and whether it can be in the future. We have four speakers tonight. We're going to start with Muazzam Beg. He'll be speaking about his experiences as a detainee in Guantanamo. He's a British citizen who spent 3 years in captivity at American detention facilities in Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay. He'll give us a rarely seen inside view of a detainee's life, imprisoned without any charges ever being pressed against him. He spent almost 20 months in solidarity confinement in Guantanamo. So I'll let Muazzam Beg carry that on.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah, wassalatu wassalamu ala rasulillah. Brothers and sisters and friends and supporters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As you may have heard recently, within the past few days, it was announced by the British government that finally some British residents will be returned to the United Kingdom and be reunited with their families, with their children, with their wives, whom they have not seen now for 6 years. In some cases, at least in two cases, two of the children of the Guantanamo detainees have never seen their fathers, ever, once in their life. And when we're at a period when the idea of nationality is being discussed, what does it mean to be British? When Gordon Brown says that he thinks that we should have a day that commemorates Britishness so that we can be have something to unite upon. And ironically, that the BBC History magazine did a poll and asked its readers what they thought was the one moment in time that most demonstrated Britishness. They responded by saying, or the majority did, that it was the Magna Carta, the day of the signing of the Magna Carta by Prince John and the Barons. And anybody who knows about the Magna Carta would know that the central pillar of this document, this writ, is habeas corpus, the right to the body, that no man will be held arbitrarily without facing his accuser or that he will be released. And yet today, let alone Guantanamo, let alone the rest of the world, here in this country, the rights of habeas corpus have been suspended for foreign citizens. If you look in the cases of at least 20 or so people in this country, they've been held without charge, without trial, and haven't even been questioned. At least I, as a Guantanamo detainee, was questioned over 300 times. But here in this country, when we're talking about the extension of pre-trial detention to 42 days, and sometimes they're saying 56 days, and before that they wanted 90 days, when it's already 1 month, they want to extend it. So part of this is where we're at today as a society in the United Kingdom and the rest of the world, the idea of the removal of habeas corpus, the idea that it's okay to have people in prison without trial, without charge, simply because of the allegations and under the broad spectrum of protecting national security. Now, in the name of national security, so much has been done in the past 6 years post 9/11. And it was launched under the name Operation Enduring Freedom by the Americans. And it was as if our freedom, wherever you're from, the West or the East, it's the freedom that the quote-unquote terrorists are determined to remove. Not your security. Freedom, because it was called Operation Enduring Freedom, and in the name of that freedom, they invaded Afghanistan. In the name of that freedom, they implemented Bagram, Kandahar, perhaps Diego Garcia, other ghost detention sites, and the most visible part of those detention sites became and is Guantanamo Bay, in the name of freedom. And the greatest paradox, of course, is that if you look at any of the pictures of Camp X-Ray, Camp Delta, Guantanamo Bay, you'll see that outside every cell, major cell area, there will be a white plaque. And on this white plaque, it actually says, "Honor bound to defend freedom." And behind these plaques are rows upon rows of cell blocks that measure 8 foot by 6 foot, converted shipping containers in which human beings languish in the name of freedom, without charge, without trial. The other great paradox, of course, of Guantanamo Bay is that we as detainees often used to see animals walking around, if we could get to see these animals in the daytime at least. And one of the most popular, most well-known animals in Guantanamo is the iguana. And the iguana is a protected species in Guantanamo. The iguana cannot be locked up. The iguana cannot be kicked around or punched or shackled or thrown away, or have things thrown at it. It can't be picked up and dashed against a wall. You can't spray pepper spray at an iguana. You can't interrogate an iguana and put a gun to its head. You can't chamber around, put it in, and question the iguana. But you can with the detainee. Because if you did it to the iguana, you'd be fined at least $10,000 and perhaps even face some sort of disciplinary measure within the army itself. But if you do it to the detainee, as has been done to the detainee, then in some cases you can actually expect a promotion or a commendation, depending on the circumstances. And of course, the other important thing about Guantanamo Bay is that I can tell you, and I think most people would tell you, that by the time they went to Guantanamo Bay, by the time the decision was made for them to go to Guantanamo Bay from where they'd been held prior to that, they were looking forward to it. I'll repeat that again. They were looking forward to it. Except for those of you who early on went to Guantanamo in the first few days, most people have had to go through a process, often which has been referred to as extraordinary rendition, which if you were to say fast a few times, extraordinary rendition, it even sounds like extradition. Only with extradition, at least, there's some sort of treaties involved. Here, in extraordinary rendition, nothing of the sort. Because that in itself describes to you, if you look at the word rendition, one of its uses you'll find historically was when escaped slaves would be captured and rendered back to their slave master. And when they add the adjective extraordinary, it almost makes it look like a euphemism, that it's not really that bad. Until you know it for what it is, kidnap, abduction, false imprisonment, torture, and in the worst case scenarios, death, is what occurs with extraordinary rendition. And then after you have been extraordinarily rendered, you have to be held somewhere. You're not taken straight to Guantanamo, but you have to go through some sort of a process. And that process either involves military detention camps, proxy detention camps, i.e. that are held and operated by countries known for the human rights abuses, or secret CIA detention sites, which are so secret that nobody still knows what actually takes place in there, other than people literally disappear and are assumed to be there, and that they reappear 5 or 6 years down the line and end up in Guantanamo Bay. And some of those cases, it's been said by the United States government in the past that we don't operate, we don't carry out these sorts of things, and we don't have ghost detention sites. And just a few days ago, I was called incessantly by the media to comment on something that the CIA had just admitted. And that was, they admitted at wiping out the tapes of interrogations with certain suspects or certain detainees that were held in ghost detention sites. And the argument, or the reason why they said they'd wiped out these tapes, was to protect the identity of their operatives. Now, I'm no huge video and media expert, but if ever you watch any sort of footage, they do have something where you can obscure the face and obscure the voice, and you will never know who it is that's speaking. They do it all the time. To say that the world-famous CIA couldn't do that is an insult to the intelligence of any ordinary person. So then why did they wipe out these tapes? What was it that was taking place in these tapes that they didn't want and don't want people to know about? Remember, Guantanamo Bay is relatively, even though it's the most visible sign of what's taking place in the war on terror and all of the abuses, there have been accesses by lawyers, by even human rights activists, to some degree, some amnesty observers, and some media, controlled media. And you'll be hearing later on from Andy about the catalogued stories of those detainees that have been transcribed in various reports, including the so-called tribunals they've faced. But you don't know what's happened in these ghost detention sites. And they're so secretive that the government itself has denied that they exist, except for when people just materialize from nowhere. And some of the things that have happened, for example, when I just said to you that there are British residents who will be returned now, thankfully, to the United Kingdom after, in some cases, 6 years of incarceration without charge and without trial, one of them remains. One of those British residents remains, and the reason why he remains is because he's been put through what's known as the military commissions process, the military commissions proceedings. And I was the very first person who'd been designated for trial by the military commissions. And the military commissions process means, or necessitated, as far as they were concerned, that there will be a three-panel member, that secret evidence would be admitted, that any witness that you want cannot be produced because you can't get clearance to get to Guantanamo. Any charges that you have, you can only see the unclassified part. You can't see the classified information against you. You can see that. So somebody can say, you did this, and you say, well, I don't think I did. Well, and they'll say, yes, we do. And I say, where's the evidence? They say, well, sorry, we can't tell you, it's secret. That's the sort of court proceedings that I'm talking about, where it would have been closed. So the British government stepped in, or members of the British government said, that this is not something adequate that we can recognise for our citizens to be treated this way. It took 3 years, but eventually I was released. But this man, Binyam Muhammad, who remains there because he's not a British citizen, although he's a long-term British resident and speaks English the way that I do, because he doesn't have the British passport, he remains there and he's going to be put through this process. But before he got to Guantanamo, he had to go somewhere. He was rendered and captured in Pakistan. From there, he was moved and interrogated in Morocco. Why Morocco? Nobody really knows for sure. Other than that, it was a place that's known for human rights abuses. And part of the abuses that he had to face, amongst other things, was that interrogators, with the knowledge of American intelligence being present, took a razor blade and started cutting and slashing his chest, eventually, and they took it down to his private genital area and started slashing him there. And then eventually they took him, after putting him through this process, and this is just a snapshot of one of the things that happened to him. The other things he won't even care to discuss because they are so humiliating. And yes, those things won't happen in Guantanamo, because they would have already have happened somewhere else before you get to Guantanamo. And that's what I said to you earlier on. By the time I arrived in Guantanamo, I was looking forward to it. It couldn't have been worse, as far as I was concerned, than when I was held in the Bagram detention facility, where I saw people being getting beaten so badly that it led to the deaths of two detainees. And these deaths have been accepted and acknowledged by the United States military as something that took place. It's not just an allegation from me that's unfounded. People did die there, and it's been accepted by the US military, but nobody's ever been convicted of any crime that relates to the charges. And so, when we're talking about the issue of human rights today and what's happening, You can't get away from the fact that everybody that's held in Guantanamo Bay also is a Muslim. It's impossible. Over the past few days, I've been doing a series of in-conversation speeches with a man called Captain, or former Captain, James Yusuf Yee. And he himself was a West Point graduate, that is America's most prestigious military school. He became a chaplain or an imam for American soldiers and was then stationed in Guantanamo Bay, where he tried to minister to Muslim detainees all of the issues that were affecting them. And if you read what he has to say, and if you hear some of the things he has to say, as an American soldier, who himself then was later captured and then accused himself of being an Al-Qaeda spy, even though he received commendations for military service, and even though many detainees saw him as just another American soldier, he talks about the consistent, systematic religious abuse of Muslim detainees. He talks about how he saw himself, let alone what I saw, how he saw the Quran being torn up and thrown into a bucket used for defecation and urination, how he saw people ridiculing and making fun of the adhan or the recitation of the Quran, or writing things in the Quran, obscenities in the Quran, or throwing it on the floor, or dragging people by the hair while they're in the state of prayer, and things like that that will be done in order to break the spirit of the detainee. And how when he protested against some of these things, and the important part about this is that it was at the time of General Jeffrey Miller, who then later became famous for Gitmoizing the famous or infamous prison, the other infamous prison in the world, Abu Ghraib. And it was under Jeffrey Miller's regime that this system reached its climax and ended with many detainees taking drastic actions. Parts of those drastic actions were the hunger strikes, which continue in one form or another to this day. And those hunger strikes have led to a reaction which is known as forced feeding. Detainees who have reached the end of their tether, they've tried every single thing. They said, we don't want mercy, we're not begging for clemency, we want justice, give us our day in court. But that will never happen, it never has happened. To this day, not one person has been convicted of any crime remotely related to September the 11th, let alone any other crime in Guantanamo, and not one person has been released as a result of any legal proceedings. It has all been diplomatic pressure and discussions between governments. But the force feeding that's taking place requires that the detainee is strapped down to a chair, that his hands are tied down to the chair, that his legs are tied to the chair, that his head is strapped back against the chair so he can't move. And then a tube is taken with a metal end at it so that it can be guided into the nostril and pushed down the nasal passage into the stomach where liquid food is pumped into it. And the person is forced to eat, forced to be nourished. And that nourishment keeps him alive. And that's all it does. Alive like a vegetable, alive, surviving, existing. That's all. And these attempts have all been regarded by the United States military and government as self-injurious harm and not attempts at hunger strikes, so that they can minimize the number that they say of people who are hunger striking. But the reality is, when people are pushed into a desperate situation where there is no recourse to justice at all, what do you expect of them when you know that had you treated an animal like that back in the free world, you would have been arrested? You would have been reported for the Royal Society of Protection of Cruelty Against Animals. But when you do that to a human being, and when you've already dehumanized him, and part of that dehumanization process, let's be clear, is because you've said that this person is a Muslim, that he's a terrorist, that he's darker skinned, he's an alien. In fact, part of the terminology used to describe us as detainees was enemy aliens. Enemy aliens. Think about the word alien. Films come to mind, don't they? Alien, aliens, aliens. Alien Resurrection, Alien versus Predator. You think about all of these creatures. And if you look at some of the pictures of the detainees, when you see the first pictures of Camp X-Ray as you can see up there, what do they look like? Do they look like human beings? That's part of the dehumanization process. You see the ears and see the face and the mask and the eyes. Something extraterrestrial. Non-human. And once that's been done in the mind of somebody, it's easy then to move on to the next step, which is to cruelly, inhumanely, and degradingly treat a person and step into the realms of torture, where the person that you're torturing is in fact a non-person. It's not a human being that you're degrading. And that's why when you saw some of the picture that later happened in Abu Ghraib, I can tell you some of those things were already happening. Only the pictures, the photographs of those haven't been put about. But I can tell you categorically with my hand on my heart, those pictures exist because they happen to people like me and others. And when they're taking people into custody, to this day, it continues to happen. So finally, I'd like to say, if you get a chance, inshallah, go back, go outside when you're leaving, see the books that we have available about the issues on the war on terror, about the abuses and what I've been talking about, and inshallah, try to be active and not reactive, be proactive and get involved in all of the campaigns with cage prisoners, with Amnesty, with Reprieve, and continue to try to hold governments to account. Thank you.
I'd just like to thank Muazzam for giving us that insight.